Welcome to another episode of the WWE Podcast with Aid Willis. Another week's gone by, another week in lockdown has gone by. There's positives though, throughout Europe, throughout the world, there's starting to be restrictions lifted. So obviously countries, people, scientists, experts are all making progress and they're all feeling a little bit more confident on the situation, I suppose. Obviously I'm no expert, I'm just going off what you read on the news, what people have been told and from each government to government. But to me, things are looking up. Obviously, it's not a great situation. We're still stuck where we are. Making the most of it, of course, WWE is carrying on, which is a massive bonus. And of course, if WWE carries on, that means I'm carrying on with a SmackDown review, which aired on 17th of April, Friday 17th. So let's crack on with it. SmackDown started off with a moment of bliss. So Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss hosting the talk show. Again, for me, Nikki was a little bit too silly again. I just feel like Alexa's so sort of classy. She looks the part. She's very confident, but sort of like struts her stuff a little bit. Where Nikki is a little bit too silly, keeps slapping the title, gets a bit overexcited. It's almost like Alexa's little sister, and even some of Alexa's looks when Nikki is doing this, I'm not so sure they're just for the storyline. I'm not so sure they're actual like kayfabe stuff. I almost feel like that she does get a little bit frustrated with her, whether she's frustrated at her or whether she's just frustrated with what WWE are doing with her, because I find it irritating some of it. So I imagine Alexa working with it is probably quite irritating as well. For me, I just want her to be serious. But then again, I do think it works. See, it's a difficult one. For me personally, I prefer her to be serious. I prefer both of them to be serious. Of course, have that light-hearted humour that they add into their speeches, that they add into their promos. But for a serious sort of tag team, you need both members to be a serious character without the silly little goofy type-esque, which is basically Nikki Cross. However, I do think it works, and I do think them two work very well together. I think Nikki plays that character well, so it's just a personal preference that I don't like it. It may just be that Alexa is that good at what she does that she is beyond superior to Nikki, so she outshines her, which may be why I feel like that. Because, as I said, Nikki is very, very good at what she does. I just feel like Alexa is maybe a step ahead. And I don't even think that's too harsh to say, because I think everyone would agree with me that Alexa is ahead of Nikki Cross. So, not saying that Nikki Cross can't get to where Alexa is. I do think that would need a character change or just a few more layers, a bit more depth to the character. But at the moment, of course, the main star in that tag team would be Alexa Bliss. So Alexa quickly introduces Braun, and they congratulate him, and he congratulates them for a little bit of their light-hearted talk to start the show. So that's about Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss winning the tag team titles, and obviously Braun Strowman beating Goldberg at Mania for the Universal Championship. So I must point out what I said last week about Braun not using that husky voice he puts on when he shouts down the mic in the ring normally. It was actually nice just to hear him speak properly, as it doesn't take any of that, like, you know, the monster type persona that WWE are trying to create for him. I don't think that takes anything away from it. I think obviously in the ring and he's shouting down the mic, they want him to come across scary. They want him to come across as this monster type man, but just having him sit there, talk normally, actually have a proper personality, it was nice to see. We have seen it before, that's not the first time we've seen it. We don't see it much because, as I said, they try and force feed us this monster among men crap, but it's nice to see that side of him. Of course, he's a massive guy. He's strong. We all know that. You just look at him and you know that. So there's no point trying to make him like a monster all the time, because, of course, he's going to have a personality, especially when he's got a background of strong man and you see him doing interviews outside the ring for numerous different things. And then obviously getting in the ring and acting totally different. So it was nice to see that side of him. Alexa then brings up Bray Wyatt into the conversation and shows the Firefly Funhouse clip from last week. Her tone changes to an almost cautious approach, asking what Braun thinks of it, what he thinks of Bray Wyatt. Braun replies saying that he knows Bray Wyatt and how his mind works, and that he doesn't owe him anything, and that Bray did not create him, because obviously that was the whole thing that Bray was basically saying, that he created him, he brought Braun into WWE, made him what he is through the black sheep, everything like that. So Braun notices a present and is convinced it's from Alexa Bliss, back from their days as a mixed tag team in Team Little Big, which was actually quite a nice little reference to that, because that was quite a funny, well sort of played little tag team. I know it wasn't, and it didn't go very far, let's be honest. It was only for that sort of live shows. Was it on Facebook or YouTube at the time, the mixed tag teams? I wasn't a massive fan of it, but I did like their little segments where obviously Braun fancied Alexa, and Alexa was sort of warm into Braun in the end. The contents of the box was actually the black sheep mask from the Wyatt family days, all broken. It was all ruined, with Bray's twisted laughs playing over and over again in the background. I thought this was a good addition to what is looking like quite a good build to their feud and their inevitable match. But for me, it was just a little bit like prehistoric. Now, obviously, I'm not talking dinosaurs. I'm just talking a little bit too in the past for me. Now, of course, you're going to get the black sheep reference. Of course, you're going to get the Wyatt family reference. But even the little exit screen was Bray Wyatt's old theme. You know that little glitch where it was like a flash of Bray Wyatt's old face. Or now it would be obviously that sort of like electric sound where the Fiend comes in. That type of thing. And like, for instance, another example would be Sting's crow sound. It was that, but I don't know why it wasn't anything to do with a funhouse or anything to do with a Fiend or anything relevant. It was just Bray Wyatt's old character. Well, that's long gone. That's dead and buried. That isn't really anything to do with his feud, because it's the new Bray Wyatt that wants sort of, oh, you get another word for it, could be revenge or payback for sort of like deserting him. But for me, I just wasn't that pleased with the fact it wasn't exactly relevant to what is going on now. As I said, the black mask is inevitable and that was done well, but some sort of reference to the funhouse, be it a puppet or something to do with the funhouse, because that is what Bray Wyatt is now, I just feel like that would have been a better approach. I wouldn't be surprised if a black sheep puppet or teddy or whatever turns up in the funhouse at some point, but obviously we'll have to see what happens with that. I just hope they steer clear of Bray trying to be that old character for me. Yes, reference the fact that Braun sort of like ran away from the Wyatt family, if they want to go down that route, and the fact that Bray is not happy with him, he wants a Universal Championship back, and blah blah blah, everything that's relevant at the time. But there's no need to go down the Bray Wyatt old character route. You can bring up Braun Strowman's old character route. No need to go down the Wyatt family route for me. That's just a personal preference. I actually think this segment's done well. I'm enjoying the build, and I think the match is going to be very, very good. I hope Braun Strowman actually has a nice, nice run with it, with the Universal Championship. I think, as we've seen, Bray Wyatt isn't particularly in need of it because of how Hero's character is just blossomed. It's so popular. It's got so many layers and so much depth to it. I wouldn't say it's in need. So I think Braun Strowman being at the top where he is now, let's hope he stays there, and maybe Bray Wyatt even stays in the title picture as well. So next up we had Sasha Banks versus Tamina with Bayley on commentary. A very obvious botch was early on in the match, results in Sasha landing on her shoulder. But for me, that sort of kickstarted a very nice fluid sequence with Tamina showing her power and Sasha not really having any real success, ending up with her outside the ring, readdressing her game plan like on the floor. She was like obviously sort of like overwhelmed, confused at what was going on. This clearly worked as she then gained some good momentum and dominated Tamina, wearing her down with some kicks and some holds, using the ropes to help, which is iconic to her and Bayley's heel roles. We've seen this time and time again, whether that it's a singles match or a tag team match, they are playing these heel roles so, so well. They use the ropes, they distract the ref, they have a go at the ref, they don't listen to his commands. It's just typical heel roles which they played so well. These heel type things continue when both women end up outside the ring, and then Bayley causes a distraction to allow Sasha to push Tamina into the ring post again, and then again get back on top. So Sasha is standing in the ring all proud of herself. She just got on top of Tamina, like she's winning at the moment. If you're going on that aspect, Tamina was on the outside recovering, and Bayley is bent over staring at Tamina, sort of taking the mic, which we probably thought was going to result in a Bayley getting some sort of cheap shot, considering Sasha started to distract the ref. However, Lacey Evans' music hits and she runs down the ramp to take out Bayley. This must have woken Tamina up in some sort of way, as two super kicks later, no other moves whatsoever, two super kicks later, and she had the pinfall win over Sasha, earning her a women's title match against the champion Bayley. So, for me, it was a good match. I think it was booked quite well. Obviously, Tamina was going to win. I didn't particularly like how it finished. For me, like, Sasha has got that thing with Lacey Evans. So Lacey Evans is obviously trying to get some sort of match or whatever with Sasha. So I didn't really understand why you'd go and attack Bayley. But then again, they're best friends. So you maybe, and you're sort of saving the match that Sasha was in because maybe you want Tamina to beat Sasha. I just didn't really understand why she came out. I also didn't really like the fact that Sasha had so much success in this match. Obviously, when Bayley gets involved and there's some sort of distraction, that's when Sasha gets on top. That's when Sasha should have got on top of this match. Yes, Sasha is experienced. She's one of the best females that WWE have got. So, of course, she's going to have some sort of momentum. But if you're going to push Tamina towards a world title shot, whether she's going to win it or whether she's not, you can't book a powerhouse like we've seen in the Otis feud, and we've seen in many feuds that I've been commenting on over the weeks. If you book a powerhouse, you book a powerhouse properly. You do not let a smaller star, a smaller stature of star, obviously a weaker star, and I'm not saying that in technical ability or performances, a weaker just in strength. You can't let them get on top of the powerhouse because it takes the whole powerhouse look, the whole powerhouse sort of like persona or act or character away from Tamina. So Tamina didn't really have a lot of the like power moves, because when she did get on top, it was quickly countered. Yes, granted, she did have a lot of momentum. She did have some success against Sasha, and obviously the two super kicks to finish it were very, very good, executed nicely, and they looked strong because only two was needed and she got the pin straight away. So that in itself was very good. I just think that Tamina could have maybe lost it, like lost her rag a bit, gone a bit nuts, and then Bayley was on the outside. She was always going to provide a distraction or get involved in some way. That should have allowed Sasha to get her part in the match, to get on top, get the momentum, and then whatever finish happened, whether it was a Lacey Evans interruption as well, or whether it was just the fact that Tamina had maybe got hold of Bayley and got rid of her and then turned her attention back to Sasha. That, to me, would have built Tamina in a better light, because as we've seen in this match, now if she's going against Bayley, which is a champion, so on paper, Bayley should be better than Sasha. If she's got basically beat down by Sasha so much that she needed Lacey Evans to sort of come and save her in a way, how is she going to fare in a one-on-one match against Bayley? That's the way I'm feeling towards this match. But I'm excited about the feud. They've sort of steered more away from this week anyway, of the Sasha versus Bayley sort of like breakup, which I'm sure that's going to come back. I'm sure that's going to happen. So we'll just have to see what happens with this. I just hope it's booked a little bit better, and whether that's my preference or whether you lot agree with me as well, I'll have to see. So the next match was a squash match. It was just a pure, typical squash match. It was just a pure beatdown between Sheamus and Denzel Dejanet. I don't know if I pronounce it. I'll just call him Denzel for this little review. It was just a pure beatdown. Sheamus was not playing around this week with lots of elbows to the side of the face, lots of knees to the side of the face, which honestly, they truly looked brutal. The match was finished with a bro kick in supreme fashion. He looked incredibly aggressive. And I think he's going to be a major, major heel for SmackDown when he finally returns to the main play storylines in the show. At the moment, the squash matches are good and it works for what is going on in this build-up to another pay-per-view. Obviously, Money in the Bank is a noticeable one. And I'm hoping they will use him, because he's been out of action for a long time. And maybe not action, because obviously he has returned. He's had a few matches since. He's had that little feud, I suppose, with Chad Gable. But out of action in a relevant, decent storyline, and obviously mid-card upwards, he hasn't been there for a long, long time now. So I think Money in the Bank is definitely an option for him. I'm surprised he hasn't had a qualifying match yet. If he doesn't get a qualifying match, where are they even thinking about going with him? If he's not in the match, what are they going with him? I think he could be a great addition, maybe not to win it, but to at least start a feud, like whether he costs someone to lose the Money in the Bank, and then obviously they can carry on afterwards with a nice little storyline. He'll be the heel, someone else will be the babyface. And it will just play out nicely, because he is a fantastic heel. He's aggressive, he's big, he doesn't get pushed about. So regardless of the size of the opponent, it always looks good. Noticeably, Sheamus was not happy with Michael Cole after the match. Michael Cole went on to mention Jeff Hardy before he had left the arena. So he was mentioning the chapter three of Jeff Hardy's little videos about his history, about his past, about his career, which are basically just gap fillers on SmackDown. I don't think Sheamus getting annoyed meant anything towards Jeff himself, but I would love to see a storyline where both stars are against each other, because obviously Jeff Hardy is a face, Sheamus is a heel. But either way, I'm hoping that they start getting relevant storylines. They're back in some sort of mid-card upwards picture, maybe even an intercontinental picture. Hopefully this starts at Money in the Bank. I think both stars, if they were booked correctly, well, not even booked correctly, even if they were just thrown into the Money in the Bank match, I think both stars would relish in that opportunity, and then obviously lead on to their own storylines and their own relevant content afterwards. So I think they both need it as well for their careers, because both careers are basically stale at the moment. They're stagnant, they're stuck. So they both need bookings, and they both need that storyline. So if both stars need it, you've got a face, you've got a heel, why not put them together? Leading on to the women's match, we had Naomi versus Dana Brooke for a qualifying match for the Women's Money in the Bank. Now, this was never going to be a standout match, but it was consistent. The winner, I thought, was obvious for me before the match. However, I predicted this completely wrong. I actually thought Naomi was going to win just because of her flexibility, athleticism. I didn't think WWE would let that go amiss for the Money in the Bank match. A bit like having Jeff Hardy. If you have Jeff Hardy like injury free and ready, that's an absolute no-brainer for me to put him in the Money in the Bank ladder match, because of the spots he can create, the oh my god moments that really stand out and go down in history for these type of matches. But anyway, Dana performed well, and some of her comments in the match actually added interest to her personality for me, as I generally find her character quite boring and stale, with it never really going anywhere, which is shown in her career. She's never really gone anywhere near a title. If she has, it's more as a group. Like, there'll be quite a few, like Elimination Chamber, she was meant to be in that, or a Fatal 5-Way, Fatal 6-Way, Mania. I know she wasn't actually there, she was ill, but that type of thing. She's never one-on-one, and if she has, then forgive me if I'm wrong, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember any one-on-ones with Dana Brooke, because she's never really been up there having a storyline for the title. So she's always been mid to lower card, a female in the division. Naomi had a nice sequence of three or four kicks, which were very, very nice to watch, in the usual flexible and high-flying way, using the ropes, and then a nice powerbomb from Dana shortly after. That was a very nice little segment. It was very interesting. It was nice to see. It was all executed very, very nicely. Dana had a lot of reversals and counters, which were done very, very well. Kicked out of a rear view, which I'm only saying this as if it's a big thing, as the rear view is billed as a finisher move. So kicking out of a finisher move is impressive. Not that the move itself looks painful in any way. And even Asuka does a very, very similar move, but hers isn't a finisher, and she never gets the pin from it. So I'll let you work that one out. But anyway, Dana wins via like a sort of roll-up, which, as I said, I predicted wrong. And it shocked me, but it shocked me in a good way. And I was pleased, as I do get a tad bored of Naomi as well. And although she's very consistent and fun to watch, she does also have a lot of mistakes and botches, which come with this. It just comes with her type of style. It comes with the moves she tries to pull off. So, and also some of her moves aren't always that believable for me in terms of pain levels, as I said, the rear view. Dana not only looked good physically, but also technically. So hopefully a character change or just more exposure and bookings may elevate her up the division. Obviously, if we see more of her, we get a little bit more of a taste of what she can do. So I was quite pleased. The way she performed in the match, I think, it was excellent, actually, because I don't always see her as a very good wrestler. But anyway, she's obviously improved a little bit, or maybe she's just had that opportunity to show what she's about. So anyway, yeah, she's won the qualifying match and going to Money in the Bank for the women's. Next up, we had Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose segment. So Sonya Deville is solo in the ring on the mic, very apologetic and almost begging Mandy to come out for her to and accept her apology. She mentions the history from NXT to Absolution to Fire and Desire, which was a nice touch. It was just nice, relevant sort of to the history, to where they've been together. It was believable, and it was nice to see Sonya get her own part to play in this, as it's the first time we have ever seen Sonya solo, and pretty much first time she's been on the mic with a full segment, just basically on her own. Mandy comes out and Sonya goes to apologise, with her being very close to breaking into tears, and suddenly that flip, which this whole segment was building to. Her tone changed, and then here came the flow of words and why she thinks Mandy is so selfish, and basically their friendship fell apart. I loved the inclusion of Sonya saying that she came out to Mandy's music as part of Fire and Desire. That it was all about Mandy. Sonya was in the background with her face blurred out. Now for me, this was genuine, and whether she genuinely blames Mandy for that in real life, which I don't think is the case, but the anger at the situation is real, and everyone knows it. Every fan, everyone backstage knows that what Sonya was saying, that is from the heart, that is true. She believes that. She's been the sidekick, the afterthought for so long due to Vince loving blondes. And basically, Mandy is a knockoff Trish Stratus, effectively. That's what she really looks like. But this passionate outcry continues, saying about how hard Sonya has worked just to be the second best to a Barbie doll that was made in the lab, that looks like she's made in the lab, some talentless eye candy, which, whether it's harsh or not, I actually tend to agree with everything Sonya is saying. Dolph then interrupts and he continues the apology, halting any confrontation between the old teammates. Sonya hits Mandy with a big right hand, with Dolph asking why she had done it. Like, she was all like, no, why have you done this? Like, I'm still apologising to Mandy. Otis saves the day, attacking Dolph, and Mandy gets some revenge, attacking Sonya, which had jump on Otis's back. Now, I loved this segment, from the passionate truth from Sonya and getting her full exposure in what was basically her own segment, to the involvement from all the superstars that are relevant in this feud, in this storyline. The only thing I didn't like was that Dolph was shocked and basically disappointed that Sonya hit Mandy. Like, for me, I think a cocky heel Dolph would have laughed, he would have smirked, he would have strutted away, but I'm sure next time that will be the case, because I don't think he's going to give Mandy any sort of benefit of the doubt or any sort of attention in a good way because of, like, Otis attacking Dolph and her attacking Sonya, because obviously afterwards they did go off together and Dolph got Sonya and they went off together. So I don't think they're going to be built as a couple, but they're built as definitely sort of like a mixed tag team in a way, or just a partnership. But yeah, I just felt like there was a need for Dolph to sort of like be on Sonya's side because of everything that's happened. And then I just think that with Sonya changing, because obviously she was very apologetic and then she turned and basically had a go at Mandy, I think Dolph doing exactly the same, coming out, apologising, and then as soon as Sonya hit Mandy, do the laughing thing, do the whole Dolph Ziggler thing that we've seen time and time again, because he plays that heel role so well. I definitely think Sonya will come out stronger from all of this than Mandy, as long as they book her like they have done so many times before with Dolph, because he does the female thing so well, as we've seen with Lana, AJ Lee, Vicky Guerrero, just to name a few. Dolph thrives on having a female accomplice, and hopefully this will get Sonya like higher up in the pecking order in the women's division after the storyline is over, and continue her own career in other directions. I think Sonya was very comfortable on the mic that we haven't seen before. I think she's getting better in the ring, probably because we're actually seeing her in the ring. As she said in her little promo, it was basically a sidekick. She was always on the side of the ring because Mandy was in the ring. So actually that little bit of exposure, now they've broken up, hopefully working with Dolph for a bit or maybe long term, it's definitely going to pay off in the future. We had a qualifying match for the men's Money in the Bank in Cesaro versus Daniel Bryan, with Shinsuke and Gulak ringside for their respective partners. It was an extremely quick start to the match when suddenly this hacker thing that we're not really sure what it is, but it cuts the screen and played some videos of the SmackDown's current stars saying that the truth will be heard and that we've heard the lies for so long. And then it ended with what can only be, and it said all over social media that it's Mustafa Ali's light circle. But nothing more came of it. I actually thought that was going to like halt the match, but it didn't. The match continues, and it's a nice technical, physical match from two superstars that work very, very well together that we've seen in the past, showing both superstars' wrestling ability and obviously Cesaro's incredible strength at times. Both stars had a lot of success in this match, in a very back and forth encounter, and a well booked match considering the unpredictability of the finish, because I don't know if it was unpredictable, but I think it was more the fact that I don't care who wins, because I can't see either one of them winning Money in the Bank. So it was sort of like, you've got to have one of them. I don't really care who. Maybe that's why I didn't really think it was very predictable. But Bryan countered Cesaro, locked in the yes lock, which resulted in Cesaro tapping, with Gulak preventing Shinsuke from interfering. The match itself was a good addition to the show and a good, comfortable watch for a mid-card booking. However, all four stars are just irrelevant at the moment. Gulak doesn't need to be there, and he will end up just disappearing, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up joining the list of released superstars, and nor would I be upset. Shinsuke and Cesaro at least have Sami Zayn in their little trio faction when he returns. Gulak and Bryan just haven't worked well, and they haven't worked out as I hoped, as everyone else had hoped. And I had warned this from happening from the very moment WWE put them together all them weeks ago because of the way they were booking him. They first booked him in that amazing match at Elimination Chamber that was basically Drew Gulak countering everything Bryan had. Then they booked it as if Gulak was going to teach Bryan, and all of a sudden he just turned into that little sort of like sidekick that won't leave Bryan alone, comes out, doesn't really say anything, doesn't give him any pointers, doesn't help him in the match, and then just goes off with him in the end. He's just lost the character. They've lost everything they tried to do with him, and I don't think there's any coming back from it. I think, unfortunately, they've booked it totally wrong, and it's just an opportunity wasted. Whether Gulak has any real chance of going on his own now, or maybe even turning against Bryan so they can have their little feud, I don't know, but to be honest, I'm not really interested in either of them at the moment. So moving on to something that I'm very, very interested in, and as I've said in my podcast episodes, if you listen to them each week, so we had Elias waiting backstage to come out and perform a new song when Corbin extremely aggressively attacks him, throwing him into the pieces of equipment which are like around them, screaming at him to play the song, then dragging Elias across the ground, continuing his brutal onslaught, using his scepter, leaving Elias in a heap on the floor, gasping for breath, then smashing his guitar over his own back. This is what I was hoping for last week, and I'm so glad it came this week, continuing this feud, which has been one of my favourite feuds, even for how short it's been. I love the versatility that it has in terms of match stipulations going forward, and how comfortable both stars like would be in their matches, and using weapons and the equipment, and also in their roles as a heel and a face. I think this is a very, very underrated storyline, I think, because it is a sort of, it's just sort of bubbling away in the background, but I would put money on it that it produces more amazing matches like the WrestleMania match when the singles competitions continue in the future between the two. Now, I think it's just bubbling away in the background nicely because I think it's been confirmed that one of them, I think Baron Corbin has a Money in the Bank match. Now, I would like him in the Money in the Bank match, whether both of them are in there. I think that would be a very cool dynamic to have in there because obviously it would be inevitable that them two clash. I think that would be a good, really good, a good booking for both of them. Or in the qualifying match, Elias costs Corbin, and then maybe Elias has a match and Corbin costs Elias the match as well. So neither one of them qualify, resulting in only one way they have another match of Money in the Bank. What I want to happen is probably both qualify. One of them will cost the other the actual Money in the Bank match rather than just qualifying, and then the feud continue that way, because I don't want it rushed. I think it's nice how it's building slowly, and the brutality, the aggressiveness, it's just nice. It doesn't need to be week in, week out, although because I like it that much, I wouldn't mind it. But I like the fact that they've sort of like had a break each week. Elias will just sing a song with Corbin nowhere to be seen, and sometimes Corbin comes out and cuts a little promo that he basically hates everyone or has an interview backstage, and Elias is nowhere to be seen. But as soon as they're back together, they hate each other and they get it on. So I think this is definitely one to look out for. Then we had the main event of SmackDown. So we had the tag team titles in a triple threat match, which was actually just a singles match in The Miz versus Big E versus Jey Uso. See, it was a normal triple threat, wasn't a ladder match, which I don't really know why they'd done that. They could have easily involved ladders, which would have been better, because basically that's a complete reverse of the WrestleMania match. Because, as we all know, a triple threat is no disqualification. So ladders could technically be used anyway, so why not just put the titles above the ring? Because that allows the ladders to be involved, obviously, for the spots that would be created. But also it's just for that win where one of them's up on top of that ladder, and it's just that spectacle of seeing it, because that's what would have happened at WrestleMania if there was fans and there wasn't any of this situation, it was just that normal tag team triple threat ladder match that was booked such a long time ago for WrestleMania, before this whole thing came about. So Jay and Miz suplex Big E through the announce table quite early on after a strong start from Big E getting on top of both stars. Jay then has his success over both stars being before being countered by Big E, and then the Miz gains momentum. It was another well-polished match between the tag teams, even though it's a singles triple threat match stipulation. All superstars are extremely comfortable in these matches, and the storyline of the match is performed exquisitely from start to finish, with all the superstars having their success and all their fair share having their own beatdowns. Big E ended it with this incredible strength, picking up Miz from the mat before a big ending on the Miz getting the pinfall to win the titles. Now, this match, although it was an incredible match, it was just far too short for me. And I didn't particularly want the New Day winning. Now, I'll go on to that why. It was just too short for me, because we know SmackDown's a 2-hour show, Raw's a 3-hour show. So the longer the time went and I knew this match was coming, I was looking at the clock thinking, how are they going to fit this match in the time that's left? Like, I was thinking, you need a good amount of time to get this in, to make it all calm, to make it build nicely to the finish. But it just felt a little bit rushed. I don't know why they'd done that. I think they could have shortened some of the other matches, or even got rid of some of the other matches. I think that would have probably been better. But as I said last week, I would have preferred a retain from The Miz and Morrison, and then this triple feud for the tag team titles continue to a proper triple threat match between all three tag teams. And as I said earlier, I would love that match to be in the triple threat ladder match like it was supposed to be at WrestleMania. And that way, a new champions would be crowned. The New Day winning, though, now it has happened, I think it's very well deserved. And in fact, I don't think any outcome would have disappointed me in this match or storyline, considering how good it has been, because it's been good for every tag team involved. I think it's elevated them even more. I just hope I get to see that original match at some point, because it would have been amazing. Now, let's hope WWE come up with some way of continuing it until a full tag team match can determine the championships, which I'm sure Miz and Morrison will complain about in weeks to come. And maybe even the Usos will come out and say, look, you didn't... Jimmy Uso might come out and say, look, you didn't beat me. And Morrison might come out and say, you didn't beat me. And I think that's the way it can go. I just don't think the New Day winning now is the right way to do it. If they're going to do that, so say Morrison comes out next week and Jimmy Uso comes out next week and says, you didn't beat me, and then they book a triple threat tag team match, be it with ladders or not, I don't see why the New Day have won. I think if they were going to do that anyway, you might as well retain it, keep it on Miz and Morrison, then have the full tag team match, and then when the new tag team wins, and clearly they wanted it to be New Day, so the New Day win, it's a proper tag team win. Because at the moment, I feel like the New Day, well, all tag teams involved, have sort of like been a little bit cheated, because the New Day's win isn't as good because it's basically a singles match. I mean, the Miz and Morrison have sort of been cheated because it wasn't a tag team match, and the same with the Usos. So I just hope it continues, and I hope we see that tag team match. But let's be positive, it was a top match to finish this week's show, as they always are. I mean, these tag teams, when they work together, when they're in the ring, any sort of segment, whether it's on the mic or in the ring or just even backstage, they work their asses off. They are brilliant, and it's just an amazing end to another week of SmackDown. So we've got more qualifying matches next week, and of course I'll bring you my review. So stay safe. Hopefully there's some sort of progress or positive outcome to the coronavirus wherever you are listening from in the world. And of course, I'll be back next week. And if there's anything you want to talk about, give me feedback on, or just want me to find out for you, hit me up on Twitter, DM me, tweet me, follow me, whatever you want to do. That's at Aid Wrestle, that's AID Wrestle. I'm very active. I post regular news updates. Give me a follow. We're all in this together. It's a wrestling community. We have regular discussions about the WWE superstars that have been released, some of the creative writers that have been released, some of the rumours that are going on. We're all in this together, especially in lockdown. Just that break from reality for a little bit. So get on my Twitter, get the conversations flowing, and we'll get through this together. See you next week, guys. You think you know me?